I put that as a search word into Google. The fourth item that came up was the best little article I have ever seen. It comes from Berkeley College. I could read you the actual URL, Universal Research Locator, I guess it's called, the address. I could read you the website address, and it goes on for about 30 characters. Or you can, as I said, look for just by RF impedance match, not impedance matching, just RF impedance match, and the two or three times that I double-checked it, the fourth item that comes up, and I know that Google's not necessarily the same two times in a row. Maybe you're going to do the search and you'll find it as the third item, maybe it's the fifth or sixth item, but it's an item by Berkeley College. And when you find that article, it is the easiest, most friendly, human-friendly article on this subject I have ever seen. It's a beautiful diagram with three or four empty spaces. In one of those empty spaces, you plug in the frequency in megahertz. In one of those empty spaces, you plug in what is your load resistance in ohms and what is your load reactance in ohms, plus or minus reactance ohms, and the plus resistance ohms. You plug in those three pieces of information, and you press calculate, and out comes something like 10 diagrams all at once. It will give you four solutions for L networks, two solutions for T networks, two solutions for pi networks, four solutions. And four solutions for pi L networks, all at once, all on the same page, beautiful diagrams with the component values plugged into the diagram with the Q value that you get for that particular configuration. Tremendous amount of information comes out of that program in 1 second. You give it the raw data, you press calculate, and all of that data with those beautiful diagrams comes out all at once. As I said, you search the word RF impedance match onto Google and you'll get it. Now I'm going to try to read to you this great big long address. If you don't get it right, just the fact that you can recognize the beginning of the address, you'll recognize immediately the right response from the Google search, and you'll be able to locate it. Here,
shorten the URL, WSY.
What was that again, Paul?
A way to shorten those big, long URLs. You know, if you got your computer up, you go to tinyurl.com, and you copy that long thing and put it into that, and a very short URL will come up. It's really good.
Okay, if I take this particular URL and shorten it, how do I know I'm going to be going to the right place, Paul?
It's an amazing thing. You put in tinyurl.com, and you know, the site will come up, and that location, you know, you put that in the clipboard. You know, you've got this long URL in the clipboard. You copy that, and then when you put it in, you know, when you go to the tinyurl.com site, and you paste it into that location, and you enter it in, a very short URL will come up. And if you give that out to somebody verbally, you know, it might be, you know, 10% or 20% of the length of this whole thing. It'll bring you to the exact same site there.
Sounds good, but I'm going to give you the address. Here comes the address. Every address begins with the same thing. Hotel Tango Tango Papa colon slash slash. It begins with that. Most of the addresses you've ever seen then are followed with www. This thing does not have www. So I'm going to read it to you. And by the way, I'm not sure which of these letters of the address, uppercase and lowercase, matter. Sometimes on these addresses it does, sometimes it does not. I'll give it to you the way it is. Here we go. Hotel Tango Tango Papa colon slash slash. Now all of this is going to be lowercase until I tell you otherwise. Baker, Whiskey, Romeo, Charlie, period, Echo, Echo, Charlie, Sierra, period, Baker, Echo, Romeo, Kilo, Echo, Lima, Echo, Yankee, period. Echo, Delta, Uniform, Flash. That's halfway through it. I'm going to read that now without phonetics so you recognize it. https://EWRC:EECS:Berkeley:EDU/. You can tell it's coming from Berkeley College. Now here's the rest of it after the slash. Uppercase Romeo. Lowercase Echo, Sierra, Echo, Alpha, Romeo, Charlie, Hotel, Flash. That was the word research, R-E-S-E-A-R-C-H. After that next slash, after research, uppercase R-F, uppercase Romeo, Foxtrot, Flash. Lowercase, Project, P-R-O-J-E-C-T-S, Flash. 60 gigahertz, Flash. The word matching, M-A-T-C-H-I-N-G, Flash. Uppercase, India. Lowercase, Mike Papa.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Uppercase Mary. Lowercase Alpha Tango Charlie Hotel. So those last words were matching slash IMP, standing for impedance. Match, run together. IMP, M-A-T-C-H, with uppercase on the I and the M. So IMP, M-A-T-C-H, period. HTML, Hotel Tango, Mike Lima. Now, that's a lot of stuff. The chances of you getting all of that right are not good. Just recognizing the beginning of it and using the Google search of RF impedance match will find this for you. As I said, every time I look for it, it's the fourth thing that comes up on Google. And now that you're looking for something that starts off with BWRC, EECS, Berkeley, Education, and so on, Research, RF, you'll recognize it. When you go to that program and you plug in the numbers and it's free and you see all the tremendous amounts of data it gives you in very user-friendly form instantaneously, you're going to say, how in the world have I ever lived without this? It'll solve a zillion of your impedance matching questions. Anybody need a fill on all of this? K2RIW on the TechNet.
That's K2KY. All right. I think I've got it all, and I'm going to take a look at this. Just one question now. After 60 gigs, you got 60 GHZ. You got a slash. Matching, is that a capital M at that point, capital Mary, and then small A-T-C-H-I-N-G after that six, over?
Don, good question. The answer is no. The word matching is all lowercase. Slash. Then uppercase I for IMP, run together with M-A-T-C-H, where there's an uppercase I and uppercase M for impedance match. IMP, M-A-T-C-H. So the word, the first matching after the 60 gigahertz, all lowercase. So 60 gigahertz slash lowercase matching slash uppercase I, lowercase M-P, uppercase M, lowercase A-T-C-H dot H-T-M-L. In some of these addresses, the uppercase and lowercase does match. Does matter. The chances of everybody getting this all right are not good. Thank goodness, though, when you go to RF impedance match with Google, I give you a 95% chance you'll find it as the fourth item that comes up. Back to you, Mel.
Let me just make sure now. This word after the 60 gig slash matching, small M, C-H-I-N-G, slash, impedance Matt. So it's IMP capital MATCA. It's one word, right? No space between impedance match. Am I correct? Over.
That's correct. But it's not the whole word impedance. It's just IMP MATCH. Imp match. We're capital for the I and capital for the M, but it's run together. Imp match. IMP MATCH dot HTML. Back to you, Mel.
I have that imp match. And after that, there's a dot before the HTML.
That's a roger.
Okay, I think I got it. Okay, http://dwrc.eeds.berkeley, spelled out with the small b, dot edu slash research, capital R, small ESCH, slash capital RF, slash project, all small letters, six.
That's a roger. Projects, plural, P-R-O-J-E-C-T-S, all lowercase, slash 60 gigahertz, where the G, H, and Z are uppercase G, uppercase H, lowercase Z, 60 gigahertz, slash, then the matching, slash, imp match dot html. You got it, Mel.
I've got it. Okay, very good. I shall take a look at it. That sounds fascinating. I think that, where has it been hiding all this time? No mention of it. It's the first time I've ever heard of such a thing. Okay, let's see now. Let me just finish up on this tuner. Coming back to mind, one of the so-called real selling points of the 50s with the Johnson Kilowatt or Johnson Jr. Matchbox, Kilowatt Matchbox series that they had, is that because of their type of configuration, the way the tuner was laid out, that it had a tendency at resonance, because the resonance circuit is there, to reject harmonics. So they became very popular with a number of hams who claimed that they did a lot to remove TBI problems. A lot of hams didn't realize that you could tune out the harmonic problem that you had with TBI filters, the low-pass filters, but the tuner went a long way also to helping in rejecting harmonics, and was amazed that I demonstrated back then how I could brought that Johnson Matchbox around to a number of people and showed them that with the TV set present, how just using that Johnson Matchbox and, you know, being able to resonate in whatever circuit, whatever frequency you're on, you moved around, that it would go a long way to remove television interference. Quite effective, Dick. Over.
Yeah, Drake, among other companies, made a beautiful filter for eliminating television interference. And as we've discussed a number of times in the past, there's a hidden warranty on almost every television set ever sold in the United States. And that is, with rare exception, every one of those manufacturers will supply you free of charge the television interference eliminating filter if you simply request it. That filter should have been on the front of your set, since a number of television viewers are going to be living in a rural area, not going to be living next door to a taxi cab dispatching service or next to a police station or a fire station. They don't have to put up with nearby high power transmitters, whether they be ham radio, TV, fire, police, whatever. Since they're not going to be living there, they don't need this filter. And the television manufacturer got permission from the FCC to leave the filter off, so the television manufacturer would save money. FCC agreed to that as long as the television manufacturer would supply the filter to the TV owner free of charge on request. That's the good news. The bad news is the FCC was not smart enough to dictate that hidden warranty information be supplied in the owner's handbook, the owner's manual. Therefore, 99% of all the television watchers do not know that that free service is available to them. We amateurs try to propagate that information. The problem we amateurs quite often run into is you have a television watcher next door, we'll say, a neighbor, let me drop.
What did you put at the Google Deck WS, Glenn? I need the shortcut.
Yep. Google was the search, and the search word was RF space impedance space match. RF impedance match. They used that as a search within Google, and the fourth item that came up was this Berkeley site. Back to you, Paul.
RF space impedance space match. Okay.
RF impedance match, and they found it. And it's a beautiful site. I've used some extremely expensive computer modeling programs, which are hostile as all hell. Difficult to get into data. It's got to be in exactly the right format. And it gives you one little piece of information back out when you pay for the program and you do everything just right. This program is free, beautifully illustrated, gives you a tremendous amount of data in 1 second. You look at all of those output diagrams. You won't realize it at first. If there's a couple of blank spaces or there's a space that's already filled in and you cross out the word that's there, you erase the word that's there, like it'll say 1 gigahertz and 10 ohms and 50, it'll say 1 gigahertz and 50 ohms and 0 ohms of reactance. And you plug in your 40 ohms, your 10 ohms of reactance, and your frequency, 30 megacycles instead of 1 gigahertz, and you press calculate. And you'll see a bunch of diagrams below, and you don't realize that all of those diagrams below, all of the numbers for all the inductors and capacitors get filled in immediately. And the Q number for that network is printed alongside of it. So in 1 second, you get what looks like a gigabyte of data, if you know what I mean. Okay, so once again, back to television appearance. So that hidden warranty is there. 99% of the television owners don't know that. And the net result is that a hand gets a report that he's getting television interference to the neighbor, and he says, I can add a filter that'll solve it. And the neighbor says, no, I don't want you touching my fence. The neighbor would have a hell of a lot more understanding if the neighbor understands, hey, this is the filter that your television manufacturer admitted to the FCC should have been there. And they left it out to save money. And you can get the filter free of charge if you ask for it. You have to wait around a month to get it. You have to have somebody come and install it. I, the amateur radio operator, will give you a filter of equal quality or higher quality, and I will install it for you. And if you think I'm going to damage your set, then you can have your favorite television installer install it for you the next time he comes and does service. So, now, since we're almost all on cable these days, this problem is almost gone. But back in the days when people had aerials on the chimney, that was a good way to go. I'm going to pass it back to Mel, K2KEY. Drag your feet a little bit and let's see if Paul has come back because he found this beautiful website. K2KEY with a little bit of delay. K2LIW on the deck net.
I'm looking at it right now. It's very good. Let Mel pick it up. Go ahead, Mel.
Yeah, plug in some numbers in that one, Paul. Just press calculate. And then look at all that data, page down, and look at all the data you get, and you're going to say, wow, how have I lived without that? You got it, Mel.
Very good. This is K2KEY, and I shall look at it tomorrow for sure. That's something that I will keep at hand, because I'm constantly running into those kinds of problems, that's for sure. And I can think some of them have become awful, nasty problems. Yeah, and let's see, the final words on, the dual differential capacitor. Again, as we were talking, we sort of got off the subject, but my final words are, with that dual differential capacitor, you can make one very easy, either by, like I outlined, taking two 0 to 100 PF capacitors, opening one to its closing one down to its maximum capacity, opening the other to its minimum, put the two, to drive together from the one shaft that they both will, in other words, be more or less linked together by coupling the two shafts by either a belt or a little pulley belt, Or there's one other way. You could take the one capacitor, take the rotor out of it. In other words, remove the shaft with the rotor. Take it, turn it upside down onto the other capacitor, and you have to cut that back plate, plate where it pivots to match the other. In other words, they have to be two identical capacitors. So now that this one rotor, as it goes through its orbit of turning, you'll see that, like, again, it's making one set of status. In other words, increasing half the capacitors while one section is increasing, the other section is decreasing. And that is the method that is used in those tuners to balance a balanced wire feeding of these loops. That's just another one version of the tuners that is used, that is being used for loops, Dick. So, okay, shall we go on? Try to get one more in. Over.
Go for it, Mel.
Reading over what we've got here, and here's one of the interesting. I am moving upstate New York. Congratulations. and I'm going to have acres and acres of land. And paradise I'm going to. No restrictions, no TBI problems, and plenty of room with big tall trees and all for ham and antennas. And one of the antennas that I would love to put up, because I've heard about it, and I'd like to know, what do you think about it? A rhombic. Yes, you do need acres of land. And yes, to put up a rhombic, and what do you want to cover? From 40 meters through 10 meters. Oh boy, that is one big rhombic. You want to say something about a rhombic, Dick? Over.
Yeah, it's an antenna that has no minimum and no maximum. I know people who have set up rhombics on 80 meters. I know of people who have set up rhombics on 80 meters. There was an extremely serious moon-bounce guy in Australia with a great big chunk of land in the outback, where he set up four stacked rhombics, something like 400 feet on a lake, and used them on 2 meters, 144 megacycles, for moon-bounce operation. He only had something like a 5-degree window in the sky, but when the moon moved into that window and he transmitted into that rhombic, he was the most potent thing that Australia has ever had on 2-meter moon bounce. So a rhombic antenna, properly designed and deployed. I've seen a rhombic antenna used on 1296 megacycles. Alan Katz, KTUIH, entered one into an antenna game competition at Trenton State College 1 year. East Coast VHF Society antenna game competition. So it gives you a lot of gain with rather simple hardware. And at many of the HF frequencies, simply stringing the wire across the tops of trees with a bow and arrow is good enough, and it can tolerate some wiggles in between. How straight does the wire have to be on each one of the legs to get maximum performance? There, I'm not sure. But even if you're a couple of dB below maximum performance, that antenna is capable of a lot of performance. Mackay Radio and RCA Radio on Long Island, with the press wireless information, transmitting very high reliability data across the Atlantic Ocean into Europe for lots and lots of decades, used rhombic antennas. Very successful design. KQKEY, KQRIW.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Yes, I was going to ask, because I do remember that McKay Radio out in Hawaii and a number of places out there at the overseas station, receiving station, I believe they had it Riverhead. Was that part of the old RCA, I believe, system? Was that the rhombic that they actually did have at those locations, Dick? Over.
I think the answer is yes. I did visit the RCA site, which is on the Yapang Middle Island Road, I think it is, just east of Middle Island, Long Island, but it's north of Jericho Turnpike, and they've got a zillion acres out there. When that was in operation, in the 70s and 80s. I visited that site. I saw these stacked telephone poles. I think they were 150-foot tall telephone poles stacked one on top of the other. So we had something like 300-foot altitude telephone poles supporting these massive rhombic antennas that were strung between the telephone poles. And yes, those were rhombic antennas. At the site, at the RCA radio, whatever it's called there, in I think it's called Rocky Point, Middle Island area. And was that a transmitting site? I think it was, and I think the receiving site was in Riverhead. I didn't see the Riverhead receiving site. I saw the receiving site in Southampton, which may have been a different radio group, but lots of rhombics have been used very successfully on Long Island for both transmitting and receiving. Back to you, Mel.
Hey, a couple words about rhombics. Curious. Just curious. I'm sure this will never be within my reach. How do we actually categorize a rhombic? Could we say a rhombic is basically four long wire antennas? Because I'm looking at a configuration in my, I'm actually thinking about it in my head. You know, they don't really cover a heck of a lot of the antenna manuals on the actual displacement, you know, placing a rhombic, you know, building such a thing. They'll describe it, but if I was really to visualize one, could I visualize it as, say, four long wires, Dick? Is that basically what I'm looking at with, like, say, four supports, each leg supported to a pole, like you say, or a tower? Am I, in other words, if I laid this thing out and I looked down from space, would I see like a diamond, big diamond shaped type of configuration over?
Absolutely right. You would see a big diamond from space. Your next question is, how long should the legs be? And what should the angle between the diamond sections be? I'm not going to give you an exact answer, but I'm going to tell you what you're looking for. If I have a wire as a dipole, I'm feeding it from one end, that electronically is a half wave long. It radiates broadside to the wire, in all directions broadside to the wire. If the wire is east-west, I'm radiating north-south, as well as up and down. The three-dimensional pattern around that wire is a donut, with the wire going right down the middle of the hole of the donut. And the donut represents the directions where you get maximum signal. Let me drop. As I make the wire longer and longer and keep resonating the way I feed it, I keep doing impedance matching the way I feed it, that donut pattern starts breaking up into lobes that are to the right of broadside and lobes to the left of broadside. And when you look at a two-dimensional diagram, those look like simple lobes on a flat sheet of paper. In reality, they are cones in space around the wire. Those lobes that you see when you look at the ARRO antenna book and you look at an antenna that is three half wavelengths, two wavelengths, two and a half wavelengths, three wavelengths, four wavelengths, five wavelengths long, you see a more and more complicated lobe pattern. And in the flat diagram you see, they look like simple lobes to the left and to the right of broadside. As the wire gets longer and longer, the strongest lobes start grouping closer and closer to being parallel to the wire. They never get there, but they start grouping closer to the wire. And bear in mind that those lobes are objects of revolution in space. The latest issue of the Balanus book on antennas has one of these computer-generated three-dimensional diagrams on the front cover. Take my word for it, they are cones in space, each of those lobes. You take the lobe and the wire and rotate that around the wire. Use the wire as a pivot, as an axle, and rotate it three-dimensional space, and you know what you've really got. Now, the optimum Yagi, correction, the optimum rhombic antenna is where you got the right length of wire that gives you a number of strong lobes that are close to being collinear with the wire, but they're really revolution devices in space. And I'm now just going to talk about the left-hand side of the rhombic antenna, the first leg and the second leg, which eventually ends at a 600 ohm resistor. The first leg has got these rings, these cones in space. The second leg is at a slightly different angle, has these cones in space. And if you set it up just right, the lobes that you care about most, the lobes that go straight forward down the center of the rhombic, the lobes from the first leg and the second leg reinforce each other. And therefore you end up with the forward lobe, which is the sum of the left of the first leg and the second leg of the left-hand side of the rhombic. The two legs have lobes that fall collinear with each other, and they're in the forward direction. So when you set up the angles just right, so you've got the right length of wire, so you've got a lobe that's straight forward from the first leg and the second leg on the left side, and the same thing on the right side.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
You've now got four lobe generating sections. First and second leg, left side. First and second leg, right side. And they're all creating a lobe right down the bore site of the rhombic. That's going to give you the strongest overall gain in the forward direction. So you can set up a rhombic just sort of randomly. Use as much wire as you can on each of the legs and make it a general diamond shape. That'll give you good performance. If you want the ultimate performance, you set up the length and the angles just right so that you get a major lobe down the center axis of the rhombic, and each of the four legs all are creating, among many lobes, there is a lobe down the center, and they all reinforce. That's going to give you a whopper of a main lobe down the axis of the antenna. And there's another glitch you got to have to solve if you really want the ultimate performance, and that is the ground reflection is going to give you a little bit of an elevation angle, and there's ways of elevating the way you construct the rhombic, where the nose is above the ground compared to the back end. I think they usually elevate as opposed to dip it down. And again, you make the ground reflection plus the length plus the angles all come out with this major lobe in space going forward at some particular elevation angle. That is your favorite angle for the ionosphere for that particular time of day when you hold your schedules with your buddy in London. You do this all correctly, and you'll end up with an antenna that's 10 dB ahead of anybody else's antenna. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Hey, this is K2KEY. Yeah, you brought up a very interesting point here, and I'd like to just explore one question that I just came to mind. Are you saying to me that the beam width of a rhombic would be much smaller than, say, a Yagi? In other words, what is the average beam width of, say, a Yagi antenna, Dick, as compared, say, to a rhombic? What are we looking at, the beam width-wise, over?
If I look top view down at a rhombic, and it's got this great big diamond-shaped thing of wire that's filling up 2 acres of property, and I'm doing this on, let's say, 40 meters, and if I use the same amount of area, and I built a 40-meter multi-element Yagi antenna, I think I would come out slightly ahead in gain with the Yagi. But I'd be putting up a tremendous amount of hardware, and I'd be spending a couple of $1,000s, easy. In the case of the rhombic, I get most of that performance, because I've got the same effective capture area, but I've got a simple four chunks of wire held up in the air by essentially four supports, or a bunch of trees. And I'm stringing the wire across the tops of the trees, or through the middle of the trees. So I get close to the same capture area, close to the same gain as a full Yagi filling up the same amount of acres of space, but it's a much simpler, much cheaper device that's doing it. The pattern you get out of the rhombic is a little bit more complicated than the pattern you would get out of the Yagi. Both antennas, properly designed, are capable of approximately the same front-to-back ratio and front-to-side ratio. So from that point of view, you get a lot of bang for the dollar out of that rhombic. That's the reason why McKay Radio and RCA used rhombics. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Hey, this is K2KEY. All right, now, if you were to put up a rhombic for 40 meters, 7 megahertz, now, if I wanted to use this rhombic now, go to 20 meters, what do I actually have to do? To control, say, the vertical angle of radiation, what do? You actually physically have to tilt this thing to get the best the performance stick? Is that how it's controlled? I remember some, you know, discussions about this, but like I say, very small discussion. And I think they mentioned that the secret of it, from going band to band and getting the optimum performance, is that you actually have to tilt this whole thing. Am I correct? Over.
There's sort of a yes and a no to that one, Mel. First of all, the rhombic antenna is not a traveling wave antenna. That means on the wire itself, very different than the dipoles and directors of a Yagi and most of the other antennas we built. The signal is not bouncing back and forth on that wire. In the case of a rhombic antenna, it is a traveling wave antenna. The RF energy goes down the wire once. It hits the 600 ohm load resistor at the far end, and there's no more action after that. Inherently, the rhombic antenna is extremely broadband. It covers a whole lot of bands all at once. Now, if you choose the optimum design for 40 meters, where you've got the angles of elevation and the angles of the diamond and the length of the legs just right to give you the maximum performance on 40 meters, when you then feed the antenna on 80 meters, you're still going to get extremely good standing wave ratio, extremely good pattern, extremely good gain. Because you designed it for optimum 40-meter performance, on 80 meters, the angles and the lengths will be a little bit wrong. The lobes will not completely line up the way you want them to. You'll be a dB down from optimum performance on 80 meters. But a dB down from optimum performance, giving you, let me pick a number, 15 dB of gain on 80 meters, is a rock crusher of an antenna. Correspondingly, as again, you started off with a 40-meter optimum design, and it is damn close to optimum on 80 meters. It's going to be damn close to optimum on 20 meters. It'll be a little bit off of optimum, but a little bit of off of optimum on a rock crusher antenna is still damn close to a rock crusher. So because it is a traveling wave antenna with a termination at the far end and multiple wavelengths of wire, 90-some-odd% of the energy you put into that is going to be radiated into space. In general, it's going to be radiated into the general direction and the general elevation angle that you desire. You'll be a little bit off of optimum. There's multiple ways to get around that. Some guys will build three or four rhombics stacked one above the other at slightly different elevation angles, slightly different heights above the ground, and feed the right one for the right band. Other guys will feed all of them at once, feed them as a stack Yagi. Hooray. That guy, VK5, was it VK5 that AD? Having trouble remembering the call letters of this really big noise in Australia 10, 15 years ago. Let me drop. He had multiple acres of outback Australia land with these four stacked, vertically stacked rhombics at a slight elevation angle above the ground, aimed at a particular point in the sky, being used on 2 meters. Those four stacked rhombics was a rock crusher of an antenna on 2 meter moon bounce. So, don't lose a whole lot of sleep about the fact that you've optimized it for 40 meters and you're afraid it's going to die on 80 and 20. It's going to be a damn good antenna on those other bands. And with a little bit more study, you'll find out exactly how far off optimum it is on the other bands, and you can make adjustments. A guy like you would start putting a block and tackle and halyards and remotely controlled motors to move it up and down a little bit when you change the band to make it optimum again on the new band. But even if you didn't, it's still going to be darn good. K2KEY, K2LAW.
Roger, this is K2KEY. Yeah, there's one guy that's on 80 meters with the rhombic, and that was VK6HD. And he puts in one heck of a signal. I mean, that's a long haul for 80 meters, you know, to Australia. And yes, his signal is always pretty goddamn great with his big rhombic. He has a humongous antenna system there. I mean, I know he's got monsters of antennas there, and of course he's got unlimited room and the right terrain for it. Okay, the one question I would like to mention, in putting such a thing together, if it's feasible, because what kind of wire? I know they're going to ask me, what are you using for stretching wires? Because we're talking about huge distance. For 40 meters, I will say that this rhombic is going to have wires on each leg somewhere in the neighborhood of, well, let's see, full wavelength on 80 to 72, so, yeah, you're going to need 272 feet per leg. That means 1, 2, 3, 4 of these 272 feet pieces of wire. What the heck kind of wire do you use? So what did they use there at the place out there in Riverhead at the time? Dick, do you have any idea? What are you, plain steel wire? Because I'm looking at, thinking of wire, it's going to be a hell of a lot of weight up there, over.
Probably copper weld or some sort of variation of it.
Funny you should ask, what wire they used in Riverhead on these great big rhombics. I just happened to own a roll of it that I bought at a flea market. When RCA Radio was taken apart, some of the guys from the Radio Central Group collected the wire of the antenna and sold it at a flea market, and I bought a roll of it. It is phosphor bronze wire, 7 strands, approximately an eighth of an inch or 3/16 of an inch outside diameter. So it's relatively high conductivity wire. As I said, it looks like phosphor bronze or brass, but it's a good kind of copper-bearing 7-strand stuff that's known to be high in conductivity, medium high in strength. Your first requirement for a rhombic like this is to use wire big enough in diameter that it's not going to fail just because a twig of a branch hits it on the tree. So your first requirement is enough physical strength. Your second requirement is enough conductivity. Do not use stainless steel wire. Do not use stainless steel aircraft cable. I recently came off a project 6 months ago in which we built a miniaturized antenna at 900 megacycles. No, it wasn't that miniature, but a very wide conductor. I think the conductors were half an inch wide at 900 megacycles for a dipole-like antenna. But because it was made out of stainless steel, the resistivity of the material made the antenna performance a hell of a lot more resistive as opposed to radiative. On top of that, we made contacts with stainless steel with pressure contacts that had a lot of surface resistivity at the point of contact. And we realized that they were getting a lot of loss in the antenna. We found it out by putting a lot of energy into it and looking at it with a thermal imaging camera. And the wide sheet metal dipole elements were glowing in the thermal imaging camera because of the RF energy being dissipated by stainless steel. Stainless steel has a little bit less resistivity compared to nichrome wire, which you make power resistors out of. So it's very tempting to choose real strong braided aircraft cable, stainless steel aircraft cable. As guy wire, it's great stuff. As a radiating wire, look out. It's got a lot of resistance to it. So make sure it's a copper-bearing wire. I'd even be a little bit skeptical about using aluminum. I know aluminum wire, let me drop, is being used a lot when it comes to power wiring for service drops of private homes these days because Copper is getting so darn expensive, so they're using a lot of aluminum, and they make up the difference by making the aluminum wire quite a bit fatter. So, I would make it a copper-bearing wire. I'd like to move in the direction of it being stranded, so you're getting a little bit of the lift wire performance improvement, if you know what that means. So 7 strands of copper-bearing wire would be an ideal approach. Short of that, 16-gauge or 14-gauge house wire, as long as it's properly mounted so that you're not developing fatigue, mechanical failures, I think it would do the job. K2KEY, K2RYW.
10-2RSO with a question.
12 for Mount.
Okay, Frank with a question, and then also Paul. I'm listening on both the input and the output, so I'm hearing 2 replies at once. Paul first. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, yeah, Dick, I got the URL down to about 20 characters instead of the 74-some-odd characters from L. Now, I went to the website, by the way. I see all the specific calculations. But I can give this out. It'll take 1, 2, 3 if anybody wants to copy this thing.
Okay, we'll pick that up in a second. Let's see what Frank's going to say first. Go ahead, Frank.
Good evening, Dick. About a year ago, I installed a small rhombic from the north side of my house over to a utility pole in my neighbor's backyard, with his permission, of course. Approximately 40 feet in length for each leg, giving me a total of about 160 feet. So it's by no means a large rhombic. My question is this. It concerns the termination. When I originally installed it, I left the one end, which is on the southwest corner of his lot. I left that end open. Later on, I experimented by putting a jumbo wire across and, in effect, creating a loop. Now I recently discovered in my junk pile a 600-ohm resistor, a rather large one, that I salvaged from an old Barker and Williamson folded dipole. Would I get better results and probably more directivity by installing that resistor on that end?
No. You're about to say, gee, why the hell do you use a resistor? If you design a rhombic correctly with a 600-ohm resistor, it's got a beautiful front-to-back ratio. What happens is that energy that you load into one end of the rhombic goes down those 4 legs. A high percentage of it gets radiated in the space. Of the energy that didn't get radiated on the first pass, it comes down to the far end of the 600-ohm resistor, hits the resistor, and dies. Start off with a good design rhombic with a great front-to-back ratio and a nice pattern. Remove the 600-ohm resistor. The forward gain will almost not change at all. The front-to-back ratio will degrade quite a bit. A real good rhombic might have 20 decibels of front-to-back ratio. Remove the 600-ohm terminating resistor, and your front-to-back ratio might be 8 dB instead of 20 dB. The forward gain will be very close to the same, almost identical. So that resistor is almost only there for front-to-back ratio. What some very smart guys have done is they put a feed line at the north end of the rhombic, a feed line at the south end of the rhombic, a bunch of relays at the two ends, and a pair of 600-ohm resistors. So they can intentionally decide to feed the rhombic so that it fires to the north and then gets terminated, or fires to the south and gets terminated. If you've got the resources, that would be the highest adaptability of a rhombic antenna. Now back to you, Frank.
Oh, that's great. Unfortunately, I only have one 600-ohm system, and I think rather than play around with relays, I'm just going to... Well, I never did put it up on the north end, but as I said, I did throw a jumper wire across those 2 legs. Probably right after field day, I'll go up there and remove the jumper and again try to get better directivity. As I said, now with the jumper, I basically have a rhombic-shaped loop. So, yeah, we'll give it a try and see how it works out. Thanks for the info. Back to that SQR.
It would be a lot of fun, Frank, to put a relay at the far end, arrange it in such a way that the voltage you feed down the two left side and the right side of the rhombic with an RF choke fires the relay, and the relay becomes a short and an open, or a short, open, and 600 ohm, and find out what happens to the pattern gain, front to back, whatever, with those various configurations. That would be a fun project. Did you have any trouble feeding the input end of the rhombic? Was it around 300, 400, 500 ohms or so? And did you feed it with open wire line? Back to you, Frank.
Yes, Dick. I used 450 ohm metal line. Very short length, approximately full 12 feet or so. And that's connected to an ICOM coupler, antenna coupler, which is located under the PE of my house. I never did measure the resistance. Just ran a coax down from the antenna coupler, and seems to be working very well. That is when the propagation is good, which hasn't been so lately. But hopefully this summer or fall we'll get to feel the full effect of it.
Okay, sounds good. Come back and let us know how well it works. We're approaching the bewitching hour, Mel. This was TechNet number 1192. You guys wasted the last 4 hours of your life listening to this jazz. 73 you all. Try to be kind to each other. Help each other out a little bit with what you know. Share the knowledge and propagate more ham radio operators. Try to be a little bit of a Mel, what's the word I'm looking for? Elmer. Bye-bye for now. K2KUI, you got it, Mel.
Hey, Mel, do you want the, that URL is really short, down to nothing.
So go ahead, Paul. I want to mark that down. I'm sure a few people may be interested in it. Go ahead, please.
All small case letters. It starts up the same way. http://, tinyurl, that's tinyurl.com/, that's very important there, three Papa, November, three Bravo. I'll read it again, http://, tinyurl.com/, 3 Papa, November, 3 Bravo. QSL?
That's all. I'm sure I have an http://, tinyurl.com/, 3 P and 3 B. Bravo. Correct? Over.
At the beginning, I think you got wrong. It's, you know, they start off the same. HTTP, Hotel Tango Tango Papa, /, tinyurl, T-I-N-Y-U-R-L, .com/, 3, Papa, November, 3, Bravo. QSL?
I said a difference this time. Okay, HTTP. I was wondering how come we get that in. :// tinyurl.com/, 3PN3B. Correct? Over.
QSL. I will get you to the exact site. There's a site on the internet that shortens the long things, and this is what it comes up to. I gave it a try a couple of times. It works real good.
I'll use it. I'll go to it tomorrow. Thank you very much, Paul. Have a great week. And you know where I am on 75. If you want to join us tomorrow night. Take care, everybody. As Dick said, let's try to be kind to each other. And remember, field day's coming up in a couple of weeks, everybody, so plan on somebody, some field day activity to join in. It's really a great opportunity to meet a lot of hands and to teach a lot of youngsters. Should be to, you know, really acquaint them with amateur radio and all. So we're looking forward to it, and we'll get it. Radio Club, Field Day Operation, you can find it on the website.